Welcome to the Guardians of the Game podcast, presented by the National Association of Basketball Coaches, where we go one-on-one with the top minds in college basketball to learn what makes a coach a coach.
You know, I played here, so I'm very familiar with what goes on here at the university, and to a large degree, a lot of people at the university, because people don't leave here. Once they come here, this is where they stay.
The NABC Guardians of the Game is proudly supported by Wilson, the official basketball of the NCAA. Now, here's your host, Dave Odom.
Welcome back to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. Today's guest is the head coach of the West Virginia Mountaineers, Bob Huggins. Welcome to the podcast, Bob. And, you know, it's tough time of the year. I know you're really busy out traveling around. You got recruiting going on. You're trying to keep your team on track. You've had a great season, but we're looking at what everybody calls as the second season. That is the conference tournament, and then in your case, the NCAA season beyond. Give us a little kind of wrap up on where you are right now with your team, and then we'll talk about some other things.
Well, I think first, Dave, you and I remember back when the second best team in the country couldn't get in the NCAA tournament because they didn't win their league. And I think it's a much, much better tournament now that you actually try to put the best teams in the tournament rather than, you remember the great Southern Cal teams, poor Bob Boyd, couldn't beat UCLA and never got in the NCAA tournament because they couldn't beat UCLA. But we're doing all right. I mean, we went through a bout with the flu that went through our team, and I think that slowed us down a little bit and had some real close, tough losses. But we're playing pretty well now. I think we're kind of on the uptick.
Well, just kind of looking at your bio, it's full of wins and a lot of stops here. I mean, you're a native of West Virginia, born in Morgantown. Your dad, Charlie, was a coach. He a very successful coach there. You know, you were assistant at West Virginia, Ohio State, head coach at Walsh, head coach at Akron, Cincinnati. Great run at Cincinnati there. Your record, I think, ended up something like 399-127, 14 straight NCAA tournaments and a Final Four, and then on to Kansas State for 1 year, and then back to West Virginia. Which, again, is where you're from. Let me ask you, you're a son of a coach. Your dad the best coach you ever saw?
Yeah, he's a far better coach than I am.
What made him so good?
Well, he had great organization. He had great discipline. He was a terrific defensive coach. Dave, he's in every Hall of Fame there is in Ohio. I mean, there's not a Hall of Fame that he's not in. Very, very well respected. And just got guys to play the game the right way. You know, that's hard to do. But he got guys to play the game the right way.
I've taken a team to Morgantown one time. And the thing that I remember and I was most impressed about when we left that game was the passionate energy and the loyal, just the following of the West Virginia natives in that building that day. I've often heard you say you wanted your team's personality to mirror the people of West Virginia. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Now, this is a blue-collar state, and for many, many years supplied the majority of the coal to run the steel mills here and abroad. So people here work. People here work. People here are very loyal. We're everything rolled into one here. You know, you mentioned Cincinnati. When I was at Cincinnati, we had the Reds. We had the Bengals. We had Xavier. We had Miami of Ohio. We had Kentucky right down the road. Ohio State right up the road. Here it's just us. It's West Virginia University, and everybody who grows up here they're Mountaineer fans. And I think the great thing about it is you don't have to come to school here at the university to be a WVU fan. And we've got fans all over the country, really all over the world, that are West Virginia natives that maybe didn't necessarily come to the university. You just grow up. When you grow up here, you grow up being a Mountaineer fan because this university and this football and basketball program represent the people in the state. And, you know, my my take on it coming in was that's what we need to be. We need to mirror the people in this state, their work ethic, their loyalty, their passion. And, you know, I think if we can continue to do those things, we'll continue to be successful.
You're in a situation, you know, you've been to a lot of schools, and I know they were all important to you, and you've got, you know, people at each stop that meant a lot to you, but, you know, being at your alma mater has got to have a special feel to it. Tell us about that.
I played here. I played here, so I'm very familiar with what goes on here at the university, and to a large degree, a lot of people at the university, because people don't leave here. Once they come here, this is where they stay. And I grew up in Dug Hill, which is up in the Hollow. And I remember sitting on my grandfather's lap, listening to the Mountaineers play, listening to Rod Thorne, the great Rod Thorne, the teams that they had back then. I can remember when we moved to Ohio, so my dad could get a coaching job, my dad getting up on the roof and turning the antenna so that we could pick up with the Willing Steubenville station to watch the Mountaineers, Fritz Williams and Bobby Hummel and that group. So even though we moved to Ohio, West Virginia never left us. My mom and dad are both from here in Morgantown, both born and raised here in Morgantown. My dad played here for a while. So very ingrained in the fabric of this state and this university.
I'm going to let you do this because I can't possibly do it, but I was writing and getting ready to for today's opportunity to talk to you, and I was at home last night, and I was writing down the number of really, truly great coaches in football and basketball, great players in basketball, to come out of that small mountain state. You know, just kind of roll through some of the names, because I guarantee you people listening to this don't have any idea the quality of coach that has come out of that state.
Well, football, Ben Swartzwater, the great Syracuse football coach, came out. Rich Rodriguez, Jimbo Fisher, Nick Saban, who's going to be maybe the greatest football coach of all time, Tommy Bowden, Terry Bowden. On the football side, on the basketball side, Jim Herrick's from here, Claire B's from here, Gail Catlett's from here. I mean, we're blessed. And then, you know, players like Hot Rod Hunt, like Jerry West, Rod Thorne, Fritz Williams, Gary Greger, who went to South Carolina, is a Charleston native. And a lot of the Charleston guys back in the old days went to North Carolina State, South Carolina for, I guess because they couldn't have them all here. But I think guys like Bobby Joe Smith, who was a great player, played for the Lakers after playing here. And Bobby Joe was a coach for a long time as well. So we're blessed, and I'm blessed that, you know, I have a relationship with all of those guys. That when I need to know something that I can't figure out, I know there are people that can.
You didn't mention Les Robinson. He tells me he was a great player over in Charleston, huh? Can you verify that?
I don't remember Les as a player. I do remember Les as a coach. He was one heck of a coach. They say he could shoot, I guess.
Yeah. But,
now, there were a lot of players in Charleston back in that day. I mean, Charleston, West Virginia was full of players and supplied a lot of programs with players.
I coached under Carl Tacy. Here at Wake Forest for 3 years. And, you know, whenever we had downtime, I would ask him a question like that, and he would go back into the stories of West Virginia and the D'Antonis, you know, Mike and Danny, all of them. And, of course, Mike D'Antoni now is doing an unbelievable job at the Houston Rockets. So, you know, we got to add him to the list as well. And he was just a great player at Marshall.
Dana Kirk that had great teams at Memphis, and of course Danny and Mike and their father was a great coach coming out of Mullins. Mullins has had unbelievable coaches. There's probably three or four Division I assistants now that grew up in Mullins. Greg White grew up in Mullins, who coached at Marshall, was head coach at Marshall, did a great job there for a long time. It's a very, very athletic state, and that's kind of what blue-collar places are. I mean, they have great football. They have great basketball.
The NABC is proud to partner with Wilson Sporting Goods. For athletes to perform at their best, they require the best. And for over 100 years, that's what Wilson has delivered. Wilson is not only the best-selling basketball on the market, it is also the official basketball of the NCAA tournament. For more information, visit wilson.com. Every place you've been has been a bit of a rebuild. You've done it really well, every place you've been. Tell us some of the things that you have to consider when you go into a new place that is, quote, unquote, a rebuild.
Well, I've been fortunate. I've been fortunate to be able to recruit guys to the places I've been that have kind of an affinity for that kind of place. You know, when I went into Cincinnati, I thought it was really important that we get Oscar on board and Oscar supportive. And Oscar was tremendously supportive. Came to every home game, came to practice. Was really somebody that I could bounce things off of. And it just, I mean, all the great players there were phenomenal. The Connie Durkings, I mean, the Bob Millers, the Pat Cummings, I mean, the guys that really were terrific All-American type players were great. And coming back here, it's the same way. Jerry's been phenomenal. Rod Thorne came back every summer and spent time with us. Rod Hundley. Rod Thorne has come back and spent time with us. I mean, it's a great place. I mean, it's a place that our history is very important to us. And the pride, I think, of what the people from this small state have done. I mean, they were 1.6 million people right now. But what people don't realize is our people leave to go get jobs elsewhere, and everywhere we go, we have an unbelievable contingent of fans there from West Virginia that can't wait to see the Mountaineers.
Your team plays with a great deal of heart, play with great passion. The success that you've had certainly can be attributed to your great full court defense, the pressure that your guards are able to put on the ball in the backcourt, and it continues on up. And I've heard you say on interviews that if your defense is not where it needs to be, you'll have a hard time winning because your team doesn't shoot that well. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what you say. And is that part of what you're selling to your team, or is that really true? And, I look at your team, Bob, and in all honesty, I look at them, I don't know how in the world they could press that hard for 40 minutes, that many games, and still be fresh enough this time of the year to do well in the Big 12 tournament and do well in the NCAA tournament. But you obviously don't worry about that.
Well, I mean, I worry about it, but, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, if you don't practice, you're not going to be prepared. We finished second in the Big 12 tournament the last 2 years, and we've made runs, as you know, in the NCAA tournament. So, I mean, they're young people, and, you know, I go to clinics and everybody says, how do you get your guys to play so hard? I said, I don't let them vote on it. You know, this isn't a democracy here. You know, it's very much an anarchy. And if you don't play hard, you don't play. But we play a lot of people too. I mean, when I went to Cincinnati, I'm looking down the road at Louisville and Denny Crum and the great players and the great teams that Denny had. I'm like, how do I ever beat those guys? And I'm sitting there one day, I said, well, maybe I can get 10 or 12 guys better than his 10 or 12, because I'm not going to get five better than his five. And if I can get into his bench, maybe that'll give us an advantage. And that's what we did at Cincinnati until I got Danny Fortson, and I didn't want to press and get Danny in foul trouble, but that's what we did. We pressed. We tried to get into people's bench. We tried to make people uncomfortable. And, you know, we went through a down stretch here for a couple years. And we said, let's get back to our roots. Let's get back to what we did when, you know, we didn't we don't have the McDonald's All-Americans that they have in other places in this league. The Kansas is Baylor's. Baylor's had a bunch of them. We get guys that really want to be here, which I think is a great deal. But they don't come with the accolades that some of those other people do. But maybe I can get 10 of those guys better than the 10 that those other people have. And if I can make them get into their bench, I think that's an advantage for us.
As if the Big 12 team-wise wasn't difficult enough, you more than any other team in that league face a geographical problem. You're kind of an outlier. You're stuck in the East, in the Eastern time zone. Everybody else in the Midwest. You've got to travel much more than everybody else. How have you been able to balance that? You've got academics to worry about. You've got, the travel itself, the wear and tear on bodies. How have you been able to maintain enough strength and enough credibility to hang in there to the very end over a very rigorous Big 12 schedule? And certainly it's one of the best schedules in our conferences in the country.
Well, I think it's been a tremendous commitment by our university. Our closest game is 860 some air miles, but we go out, we get on a charter plane, we fly. They can eat on the plane, they can play cards, they can study, they can do whatever is needed for that particular day, and then we go out, we play the game, we get on the plane, and basically come home. But the hard thing, Dave, is the time change. The hard thing is playing, if we play an 8 o'clock game out there, that's 9 o'clock here. And so by the time the game's over, you do the media stuff, you get out of there, you get to the airport, you go through security, you go out and get on the charter plane, even though it's a charter plane, you're not getting back till 4 or 5 in the morning sometimes. And that's a challenge. But academically, we take tutors with us. Our guys are doing work while they're on the road. The university's been phenomenal in its commitment. And if you look, we have been academically, if not the best, certainly one of the two or three best year in and year out in our league. And that's because the university is very committed to educating and helping our guys graduate.
Every stop you've been, I am sure you learned something really important. Talk to us a little bit about mentorship. Your dad, certainly, you've already mentioned he was the best coach you've ever been around. I'm sure he taught you some things other than what was on the basketball court, but there are other coaches, there are other people that have influenced your life. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Elton Miller was phenomenal. I was 2 years at Ohio State with Coach Miller, and a quality person. And his ability to relate to guys, his ability to get guys to play the way he wanted them to play was phenomenal. And so I learned a lot from him. Al McGuire was phenomenal to me for some reason. Jerry Tarkanian was phenomenal to me. And anytime that I needed to ask them a question, they were very willing and quick about getting back to me. Kevin Mackey's been terrific here of late, with the press stuff. And, I consider those guys very dear friends. And probably the guy I was closest to was Charlie Spoonhour. And I think what Charlie probably taught me was don't take things as seriously as you take things, And I know Spoon well, but I mean, he had the ability to go into a game and compete like crazy and fight like crazy to win. And when it was over with, let's go have a beer and talk about it, and talk about something else other than basketball. And that's something that until really I started hanging out with Spoon that I never was able to do.
The game of basketball at the collegiate level, in my view, has changed dramatically in the last 7-8 years. I don't know if we're copycats of the NBA or whatever, but, every team is full of pick and roll opportunities. They play four around one. There is a great premium on being able to shoot the 3-point shot. Are you okay with all of that? Had you prefer to have more of a power game? Where do you stand on that, Bob?
Well, I think Jeff Van Gundy said it best. He said, it's not that we don't have bigs anymore. It's we've legislated them out of the game. And in my mind, we've become more European. We're more spreads, play in space than what we were before. Dave, here's what I have a hard time understanding. Every time I watch the greatest Final Four games, and they have Villanova Georgetown is one of the greatest Final Four games in history, and they never shot the ball. Villanova didn't shoot the ball the second half, but four or five times, and still people thought it was great. It was a very exciting game. You'll go back and you watch the old days, and people were really excited about it. I mean, I don't understand. We've done away with advantage disadvantage for officials, and now we're telling them to call things that really aren't fouls. And you can't have that many stoppages in play and have a free flowing game. And so, they pass on some things, and then all of a sudden you get why was that a foul? This wasn't a foul. Where before it was advantage disadvantage. I mean, if a guy was going sideways and you put your hand on him, no harm, no foul. And it was no harm, no foul for a long time. And I thought those guys did a great job of calling the game that way.
The NIT just announced that they are going to use some experimental rules when the NIT begins here in a couple of weeks. And, some of those rules obviously are the expanded three-point line, a bigger lane, quarters instead of halves. What are your thoughts on those proposals and any others you'd like to see, any other kind of rule changes that you'd like to see considered?
Well, I think the same thing pretty much that I just said. We're doing everything we can do to legislate post play out of basketball. The wider lane obviously makes it harder for bigs to score. Expanding the 3-point line. You said something before that I believe, as the shot clock continues to go down, we don't have motion offense, Dave, as you and I learned growing up in the coaching profession. You don't have time. You don't have time to do what Coach Knight did so well for so many years. That shot clock has totally changed how we play, and you said it right. I mean, it ends up in a ball screen, and then another ball screen because that's all you really have time for. Here's what I'd like to see, Dave. I'd like to see four officials. I'd like to see four officials. One of them starts behind the review camera. So any review, they've already reviewed it. All those guys have to do is walk over and say whose ball was it. He says whose ball it was, and we go. And then you alternate them every 4 minutes. So the replay guy goes out. One of the guys that were on the floor goes over to the replay camera. So now all of a sudden, see, we're expecting 60-year-old men to keep up with 20-year-old kids. Can't do it. It's impossible to do. And we're asking them to do that. And then they're going to do it, 80, 90 times a year? That's preposterous. And then we all get upset when guys are out of position or there's so many stoppages in play. I firmly believe there's fouls called sometimes because guys are tired and they need a blow. I mean, if you ever watch sometimes, those guys go over and drink about a half a gallon of water, during a timeout sometimes. And that's not a knock on them. That's a knock on us for not doing a better job of figuring out how we can keep those guys fresher, how we can get better officiating. And I really believe if you've got a 4-minute break, and we have the breaks. I mean, TV has dictated we have breaks 16, 12, 8, 4. Just a guy gets up, he goes out, another guy comes and sits down. All the complaints about the replay would subside because you got a guy right there who can make the decision. It to me, it makes a world of sense.
In 10 days, we're going to see who makes the NCAA tournament and who does not. You served on the NABC committee that studied the NCAA tournament selection process. What's your opinion of the changes and proposals that were implemented at that time?
Well, obviously, I think they're great for our game. And I think the group that we had that sat and talked about those things, I mean, Dave, it's like anything else. I mean, people say, well, you know, you shouldn't just use the RPI. Okay, what do you use? They say strength of schedule. Where do you get strength of schedule? You get it from the RPI. And that becomes really a problem in some instances, not in a lot of instances, but in some instances. And, you know, I think our proposal of being able to not just use the RPI, but to use the BPI, to be able to use whatever it is, the Segrin or, you know, whatever four or five that you come up with, and then average those together. You know, you put all those together, and then I think maybe you get a more well-rounded idea of who the best teams are.
I want to say
Mike Slide was terrific. Jim Haney and Mike Slide were terrific in kind of keeping that thing on track. You know, I mean, when you got the people that we have in there, you know, I mean, it can get off track a little bit. I thought they did a terrific job and a terrific job of writing a proposal to present it to the people who are making the final decision.
Well, you couldn't have two more experienced and better leaders, certainly from the standpoint of college basketball, and Mike Slive and Jim Haney. One last thing here before we close out and let you get back to your recruiting and coaching and the other things that you need to do. One of the proposals that is kind of being bannered about right now is this proposal on immediate transfers being eligible at the next stop. Where do you stand on that, Bob?
Well, I'm not going to let my guys go through the handshake line. I mean, we'll have assistant coaches over there recruiting guys, I think, in the handshake line. I think it's preposterous. I mean, and so we've had guys already, Dave, because of the instant transfer when kids graduate, and we've had guys lose their jobs because they went out, scheduled a very, very competitive non-conference schedule to try to help their RPI, to help their chances of being in the NCAA tournament so these guys could be able to play in the NCAA tournament. And then they leave, and then the guys could play in this schedule with no players. And, yeah, you know, I think what people don't think about is timing, you know. So when can those guys leave? You know, if they leave in September, if they leave in July, how do you replace them? And here's my biggest problem with it, Dave. I've always been taught that your rights, and everybody talks about student rights and player rights and student athlete rights, your rights stop where you start affecting other people. You don't have the right to affect other people. And so now you think you got a pretty good team coming back, and you lose three guys to the transfer deal. You can't replace them. There's not quality guys, enough quality guys out there to replace them. So now you end up hurting 10 guys when maybe three guys, you know, kind of go do their thing. What about the other 10 guys? Does anybody care about them? Does anybody care about the guys who really came there to get an education that believed that educationally and athletically the right place for them when they made the decision? That's my problem with it. My problem is we've failed to look at what it does to the whole. We're so into the individual right now that we fail to look what it does to the whole.
It really does affect the whole product. There's no question about that. Finally, you've been very active in the coaching profession process, development of coaches. You've helped young coaches. You've been helped yourself. And here we are now at least you're on the backside of your career. I'm not saying you're not going to retire or anything like that, but, I mean, you're on the backside, and you look at some of these young coaches, you know, what do you tell them about getting involved in the coaching professional process itself? I know when I got into coaching, you know, they were mentors. They were people that, you know, they gave back to my generation. They were older than us, and they handed the profession over to me and my peers in certain shape. I'm not sure we did a good job of that. Is it important that these coaches get involved at a young age so that the coaching profession improves, gets better, but more than anything, that the game itself improves, which is going to help the young people?
Well, I think absolutely, but I don't think that young people today have the same kind of opportunity that we had. When we go recruit now, we're kind of herded into a certain area so that you really can't have any interaction with the young, maybe high school coaches or junior high coaches. Clinics are soon going to be a thing of the past because everybody can just pull it up on the internet. So why pay money to go to a clinic? Well, when you and I went to clinics, and I remember when I first got on the Nike deal, I was at the University of Akron. And, man, I'd go in there on Friday, man. I'd be the first one in there. So I could get in there and go to an Ed Banka suite and listen to Jim Valvano and Jerry Tarkanian and so Louis Karnisek and so on and so forth, and to be able to develop a relationship with guys who could be mentors to me. And I just think that that's, you know, I don't know. We can't hire them, Dave, the way we used to hire them. You know, you can't have student assistants. You can't. At one time we took away the grad assistantship. Most of us, that's how we got into this business, was the graduate assistant. And I just don't think we do enough as a body, or there's the opportunities that for us to have the interaction that we were fortunate enough to have.
Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game. And to you, Bob Huggins, you are a champion, buddy. We wish you the very best as you get into postseason play here in the next coming weeks. Your team is primed and ready to go. I know you got to, right now you're a little bit rushed in getting your team ready, but I know you'll have them ready when time comes. You got to make that part of the cross-country trip back over to Kansas City again. Good luck to you and your Mountaineers the rest of the season and beyond that. And to those that are listening, to learn more about the NABC, you should visit the NABC.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at NABC1927. We'll be back next Monday with another edition of NABC Guardians of the Game.
The NABC Guardians of the Game is proudly supported by Wilson, the official basketball of the NCAA.